Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast, where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today is our 100th episode.
Bow, 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 bow. Congrats to us.
Indeed.
Congrats to you, listener. If you've listened to all 100 episodes, we see you.
We also apologize.
You. We apologize for some
profusely.
Of it.
Profusely.
Especially for the early episodes, which, you know, they're rough.
I think they're fine.
They're fine. This will be a bit of a callback to some of those other episodes. We're going to be like a lot less structured this time.
I feel like the earlier episodes were part of the broader symptom of podcasting, which is everyone's like, oh, we're so fascinating and witty. Let's just record our conversations. Yeah. And it's like, there's a lot of that.
But we, even though we always knew we had a goal in mind, which was to be helpful for people who are trying to do writing. But you know, now I think we have streamlined into what that actually is and found our niche, and we figured out how to do it with more structure.
Case
studies, not guides.
This podcast, when Kyle came up with it, was really in response to the plethora of how to world build guides, but very few examples of.
Here's just some inspiration.
Some inspirational ideas.
People's own work. So exactly. our goal is we just want to come up with ideas that you can take and you have ownership of, and you're not ripping us off, and we're just trying to provoke those ideas. I used to listen a lot to D&D podcasts and to try to brainstorm for me running D&D games and doing world building. And I was like, well, I'm just listening to people tell me about D&D lore and using that.
Right.
Well, can I just get stuff that's more like generative and new people's ideas that aren't well trodden? So that's kind of why we do this.
And I think it's important because so much of the who in the in a creative process has not gotten stuck.
Exactly. And we just like having fun with our stupid ideas, our good ideas, and everything in between. And this episode is a real celebration of that, of one of our favorite, silly, also dope, also intense ideas, which is eco-terrorist druids.
I'm going to say this is firmly the in-between.
Yes. And it's
this is the in-between, man.
This was like, I think early on, one of the things that we really fucking loved, eco-terrorist druids. I think our first favorite idea in the first episode was
assassins
that were eco-terrorist druids.
And it was eco-terrorist druids.
Basically. Yeah. And so
They used farming.
Well, so there was the potato mashers, which we'll get into in this episode. And then there were also people who were just using, I think, like trees, or they were going through the ground. I think that was like they would like go through the ground and then like come up out of the ground and kill you.
Doing that. Yeah, that was fun.
Pretty simple.
But they popped up in a bunch. I remember they popped up in big ass trees too when we were talking.
Of course, it's a big ass tree.
Duh, obviously. But we were talking about the big ass tree that had the railway system through it. And the continued construction of the railway system was further killing the big ass tree.
So then they had eco-terrorist druid.
You had eco-terrorist druid trying to protect the big ass tree.
Yeah. So we like the idea. There's not a whole lot of examples of it.
Which is a damn shame.
I think there are examples but they're a little bit more niche. And I don't really want to glorify terrorism. Try to find real world examples.
I do want to glorify is a trope reversal.
Yeah.
And druids are so often the hippies, the peaceniks. You look at Radagast the Brown, and that's
what people think of as a druid.
I think it's
the hippie, it's the peace loving, like we respect nature or whatever, but sometimes it's especially in these fantasy worlds which are often using like industrial revolution analogs, is like you have this real conflict with nature being corrupted and being taken over, you know, and that's like fucking half of what Tolkien was doing was just like, oh, they're ruining the nature.
Right.
So you have great opportunities to kind of lean into it, you know, like the hobbits were kind of eco-terrorist druids a little bit.
The Ents were definitely eco-terrorist druids. They're eco-terrorist druids. Probably the original eco-terrorist druids.
And they were so druid, they were fucking trees to the core. That's how druid they were.
They literally were fucking trees.
Yeah. No, they weren't. They lost them. They lost the Ent wives. They don't know where they are.
I forgot. I forgot they actually lost them.
This will be a bit less structured than normal as a part of our just having fun and a bit more laid back of an episode. So we're just going to kind of ramble and talk about, we both have a couple ideas and we'll discuss them as we go. I want to start off with the potato mashers, because we kind of queued it up already, which was the idea of farmers who then are growing potatoes or other products that then they would they would poison, like they're like poisoned in the soil. So they were all, they would always be deadly. And then they would be, right. And they would be able to basically sneak it into certain batches of potatoes being shipped off to the capital. And then they were a part of the supply chain the whole way through. So they made sure that the king got specifically the right bag of potatoes so that like they could kill him, that kind of thing. And I love the idea. I think it was really fun. Now, okay. Why don't we take it to a slightly different level? You know, I love druids controlling the food supply. I made an entire world for a campaign centered around druids run the world because they control the food supply. Because that's, of course, what would fucking happen. They grow all types of stuff. Now, we're just going to take grapes for an example. They grow grapes. They make the wine. They sell the wine. People drink the wine.
Jelly.
But then they have the ability to basically, like, whatever grapes they grow, they have a connection to, and they can tap into those grapes wherever they go. So they can basically, like, they track this huge network of grapes in existence, but they are controlling the supply. They know exactly where it's going. So they distribute this wine specifically to the keep. Everybody in the keep has the wine, and they, from wherever they are, can tell who's drinking it, and they can basically, like a bloodbender,
yeah,
take cool. that wine within their body and then control it.
But does it only work while it's in their body?
Yes.
Okay. So you got to find a way.
No, I mean, because you can control it while it's in the bottle, but that's not as helpful.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But like,
what are you going to do? Swirl it?
I mean, it might make it
different. You got to aerate it?
Yeah. Just, it's really good wine. Maybe they do that. But yeah, I mean, so it's like the king drinks the wine, for instance, and then they are able to basically take that wine and then stop it in his throat. He cannot cough it up. He cannot bring it down. Mm. And he just chokes.
Nice.
And dies.
Dope.
And they can do that with, and you can apply that to any product where they like, they know exactly where it is, and they grow a limited amount of this specific variety because it's maybe, it's a little harder. So there's like, there's a small number of, you know, grapevines that are this type. And then they just control it where it goes.
I think this actually, yes, the murder thing is
that's
completely valid. But terrorism cells also thrive on information. I think this is a really cool flavor, even for scrying.
Interesting. Is that what you're getting? Okay, so they can like, So like they can see through the wine.
Yeah.
So they can see through the bottles, yeah. These clear bottles that are sitting on the shelves. And they can fully visualize what's going on.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You could do that. It might be easier to do with like, you do that with, I don't know.
Fruit.
Yeah. Just regular fruit.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Or, but
I think that would be, yeah.
Okay. So if you're doing that, then the lowest common denominator, why would you just do it with animals? You know, you do it with ants.
Because it's been done with animals.
Yeah. It's not as fun.
It's not as fun. And I think it's, I thought also the D&D movie did a really cool job of showing that a high enough level mage would be able to identify a shapeshifted.
But they won't be suspicious of a bottle of wine or an apple.
Correct.
Yeah.
They see that shit coming.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that people always underestimate the druids, and I think that's a big mistake.
Yes. And because the key here is, I mean, like, the motivations for them is, I don't know. That depends on the world. Like, an eco-terrorist druid is definitely trying to stop something.
Sure.
What you're up to in that world, what this king is trying to do that would mean that these druids are interested in getting engaged, you know, I don't know. But but that would help dictate also what is the specifics they do, but, like, how are they like, tapping into this food to be in the room in some way. And I think that's where I'm like, I like the idea that it's, they can control the food's physical movement.
Oh, that's super cool. I'm not saying to abandon that.
No. But I'm saying I like kind of limiting it with that rather than moving it into like, they can fully see through it, just because, I mean, apples don't have eyes, you know, I think that's one thing. They don't have sense.
Famously.
but it's also,
I was actually thinking, I was specifically fixated on the wine.
Okay.
And I was thinking about it. I thought it could work if they picked up and could feel the subtle vibrations made from people talking. near the
okay.
line.
Okay.
That's what I was saying.
Sort that's of the, fucking sick. The, let's talk
the
about
fucking,
that.
The fucking water cup in Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they have a whole bunch of wine. So they have multiple wine bottles. So they get multiple sources of vibration, and they can like piece it all together as one clear yeah. image.
Yeah.
They record it from multiple bottles.
Yeah, sort of like sonar based on the vibrations. Kind of thing.
Yeah. That I like. Good job. That's way cooler. So it has to be the wine, because I think it has to be through the glass. Because
famously, apples do not have eyes.
And don't vibrate.
Don't vibrate.
Well, I think it's because the glass will be a more pure vibration.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. That, you like bullshit some science around it.
Yeah. Like, it's, yeah. This is real science, but also bullshit science. This is America. We don't believe in science anymore. So
I'm right.
Yeah. So that idea, done.
I don't think it matters so much explicitly what the ruler is doing. I really don't.
No,
because what I love is this idea of the druid being sort of the peacenik. Nature is going to leave me alone. I'm nature. I'm going to leave you alone, and you leave me alone, and I will only come after you if you encroach on my territory.
Yeah,
is bullshit. Like, nature is called wild, not for nothing.
Nature's going to war.
I think it's nature going to war, sort of with the druids as avatars for it. And it's not even that the rulers are doing anything.
They just exist.
They just exist. The existence of society.
Civilization.
Civilization cities. Specifically, like, is an insult.
These buildings are made of stone. That is wrong.
That is a problem, right? So I'm listening to Old Gods of Appalachia right now, which is amazing. And there's a poem in there. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's long. But there's a poem in one of the early episodes called Let There Be Green. And it starts off with, let there be green. Let there be thickened trees and unshorn grass, choking weeds and hand-harrowing brambles. Let there be honey-venom flowers and sap-sticky vines that will not break. Let there be kudzu with suffocating canopy, light-swallowing gorges, the dark places where sunlight goes to be cinders. Let them rapture and extrude. Let them come roaring forth, bursting timber and cornerstone, proving that we have built nothing of permanence here. Winter chained them to old locust trees. Let them be food for the dark, wet tongue of the shifting mountain. Like, that's what I'm kind of going for with a druid here, and with an eco-terrorist druid. And that is why I think that the true eco-terrorist druids are the ones that finally fucking bring Hogwarts crumbling to the ground.
Okay. So we're going specifically for Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a swing.
It's a fucking perversion of magic. You are saying that magic, this incredible, rich power that exists throughout the world, can only be channeled through a fucking stick? You are limiting yourself to what you can define with words? What kind of a nightmare are you?
All right, I think you could... I'm removing Hogwarts to a degree to just say wizard schools. Generally, mage towers,
fine.
Just because I'm like, I'm stuck now being like, fine, it's super Hogwartsy that, and then like, well, there's other druids. But yeah, generally speaking, being like these mages, these regular fucking mages with their writing intent on paper and like, you know, all their reagents and their, you know, their bullshit and their wands,
their fucking wands, their fucking calculations.
Yeah, and we don't like that. That's bullshit.
You're perverting the earth. I think that the druid is the natural enemy of the wizard.
Mm. What about like divine magic? How do they feel? How do they feel about temples and these religious institutions?
I'm going to say I don't know.
I'm saying that they're also against them.
I think they probably are, but I think that depends on the world, man. I think that depends on the cosmology.
It does. I like the idea that the druids you're talking about, they're like the most intense, like they've perverted Darwinism.
Basically.
Where they're just saying, you know, nature is all that there is. Evolution is all that there is. And you have fucked with the system and you've cheated.
Yeah.
Like you are cheating evolution and you need to get back to raw nature and exist with everything else.
Which is not dissimilar from the narratives that other eco-terrorists have given in... I think there's a James Bond movie where there's an eco-terrorist. It's like, oh, you're corrupting things. But it does distinctly get back to this idea of you are... What we are, what the druids represent, is unchained, is unstoppable.
Yeah.
And you trying to affect this in any way... Even if it is a potentially net good,
yeah,
is going against the natural order of the world and must be stopped.
Okay, so I think this motivation, super cool, super simple. Okay, so we have motivations clear. Moving on from that, what are they doing? How are they carrying this out? What are these druids up to in this world?
I think druids are... probably the closest, certainly in D&D, that we get to another favorite trope of mine, which is the old magic, the deep magic.
Yeah.
So I think that druids are up to some real fundamental shit. They are not shooting fireballs. They are not doing it. I think they are using the tools of nature. I think they are using rot. I think they are using decay. I think they are using disease to their advantage, and using the tools of life to end life.
I disagree, because I feel like that you're just making necromancers.
No, they're not. Who's... I'm not talking about bringing dead back to life.
No, but in terms of like, it's this using blight, and you know, it's decay and rot, and they're using the tools of life to...
What do you think those things are?
I mean, like, I think it's very necromancer coded, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
And
you see what I'm...
I see your point.
It's very death magic.
I am trying to reclaim... I think that that actually belongs more with the druid than anything else.
I don't disagree with you on that.
And so I'm trying to actively, like, reclaim that.
Okay, gotcha. Now, all right.
Druids are fucked, man. You're walking around wearing animal skins and an animal skull.
Yeah.
And you want to say, like, they are so often depicted, and you want to say that necromancers have the domain of death?
No. Fair. Okay. I take your point. Cool. I guess, so then, how are they doing it day to day? Because, like, I'm imagining, you know, like, say you have a city, and these druids are trying to force them to capitulate, to flee, to just end this city's existence. And they're using overgrowth. They're using... What has broken you so much?
They're using the 10 plagues.
Yeah, I mean, they might be using...
Well,
hold on. Before you get to the 10 plagues, because I want to come at it from more of like a... How are you using nature as like the meaning, like the growth element,
yeah,
rather than the like the death element. So then saying we're going to create rock slides. We're going to create unstable earth.
Yes.
We are going to fuck with the foundations. We're going to make it so that these buildings start to sink, and there's not really much you can do about it, and just slowly wear them out. Because if you come in and just go, we're going to war, they'll come back at you and they'll probably kill you. You need to be more subtle, and you need to do it over time. You can't come in too hot, because there's not that many eco-terrorist druids. There's definitely not.
No, I think they have to be small. I think if they get too big of a faction, they lose their magic.
So
no,
I think,
pun intended.
Yeah.
But I do... I think that... All right, let's talk about overgrowth. I think that vines and grass grow faster than you can cut them down. Not saying immediately to force them out hyper magic, but it's... they creep in. They are harder to...
These trees keep growing and they keep falling.
And they keep falling over. Brilliant. Brilliant. I love that idea.
Try moving like a giant tree.
Right.
They sit and they sit there forever.
Yeah.
And if you grow like a redwood sized tree with that sized trunk and then just collapse that in a city square, That's going to be there for a bit.
You work in agriculture. Correct me if I'm wrong, but can't too much rain really fuck up a lot of crops?
Yeah. Yeah, it will ruin it.
So...
They just rain everything.
It just rains all day. You can't grow anything.
No, it doesn't even rain. They use the groundwater.
So you're the agriculture guy.
I mean, groundwater is the water that's in the ground. And they just, like, it's the aquifers and, like all the water.
I see what you're saying. I thought you were talking about something different.
No. They use groundwater. They just soak it all up. They just, like, so it is perfectly sunny because they can't control the weather necessarily. That's harder. But they can't control the flow of the water.
Like that?
From, they just.
The foundations of any structures that's been built.
Yeah. So then, like, all that water, where did it go? Oh, it went into your field.
Yeah.
And ruined all your crops because we just soaked it up through the ground, and you are shocked to find that this land is actually not good.
Yeah.
You cannot grow things here like you thought you could. And I mean, they're going to kill a lot of people in that process.
You wouldn't even have to do that. You could very simply just probably fuck with or play with the chemical balance of the land itself.
You could do that too. You can you ruin the soil health and they can't do anything. That's less interesting. It's less dramatic, less interesting. It's more effective.
Yeah.
But it is much less interesting from a storytelling perspective. Like if you were trying to be an effective eco-terrorist, true, that's what you do.
Right.
But I think the water thing is like a really great way to be like the symbol or like the visual of the farmer going to pull up a potato and he pulls it out and it's just dripping with water.
Yeah.
He's like, and it's
much more powerful.
And you're like, fuck.
Well, and that again leads to, I think you have a lot of standing water that's going to attract insects and bring bugs, and then you start getting disease. You have to deal with all of these rotting fruits and vegetables, which how are you going to, you can't create fire. So how are you going to get rid of all of them?
Yeah.
What do you know, like you suddenly are living in a swamp.
Yeah.
And not with a funny Scottish green ogre coming down and cracking jokes with his talking donkey sidekick. Exactly. Like, swamps are not fun.
No.
And the water is briny and acrid. And
I think, let's go beyond that. Go to the seawater. Say this is a port, an actual port, Ethan. And they have...
So we're a train stop? No. To conduct trade?
No, where there's a university.
Oh, good. Famously. Oh, so an actual port.
Jesus Christ. So they controlling the whole ocean is really difficult, but they can control the waves at least up close to the shore. So all these boats keep getting like sloshed around and they keep doing damage by bumping them into each other.
Yeah.
And just like ruining their ability to trade. They can't go out to sea all the time because now the port is so difficult. They just start moving rocks and they move rocks out in the sea where like they've charted the water and they know this is where you go this way and they move the rock over because they can. So then none of the water can be navigable for very long because the druids keep moving the fucking navigation lanes because they just make it unnavigable.
Here's the thing. You're right that there's a lot of potential here for really undramatic things.
Yes.
To me though, that is what is most terrifying about it because the ways that nature actually kills you.
Yes. So much more subtle.
Super subtle and not dramatic at all.
Exactly. I think it's...
And that is what is terrifying about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying...
Well, and that's why I was trying to move away from the plagues. Because I was like, the plagues...
No, that was a joke.
Yeah.
Just, I thought it was...
But fun. Just
I
like... Mean,
but they are good... They are theoretically good ways of doing it, minus the meteors, but...
Yeah, but I think it's like... Or
burning.
To your point, it's like... Whatever. It's the subtlety that makes it really interesting, where it's like... Something like that. It's like just causing accidents. Making accidents more often. That's...
Because the rotor's too muddy and you slip.
Yeah. And carriages keep getting stuck and the raiders are coming. Because you've also driven the raiders out of, like... You've driven people mad so that they're now moving... And then you have more raiders on the road because people have lost their livelihoods. And you're creating conditions for conflict that will be the end of people.
And it becomes then a thematic counterpoint also to the wizards who are doing these big bombastic light shows with glyphs made of light and shooting lightning out of their hands. And it's like, you're expending a lot of fucking energy for like you insecure motherfucker.
Yeah.
Why are you spending all of this energy to make a fireball when all you have to do is mess with the acidic level or the pH level of the earth to destroy thousands of acres of crops.
Yeah. Done. Yeah. Like that's literally, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
Soviets did it. pieces of shit.
But effective.
Yeah. But okay, so then going to a new idea, because that's what we're doing in this episode. We're just going all over the place.
Yeah.
Keeping it moving. Okay, so then so you have these people acting like this, creating this type of chaos. If I'm, you know, if I'm in charge, I'm probably starting to see that nature is betraying us. And I might not know that there's the Yucatara streets. Maybe I do. So I'm going to create a isolated, nature-free zone. I'm going to create a keep.
Interesting.
That is like metal and...
Metal.
More stone.
Metal.
We already said
no stone.
But I think if it's not living, how much can they... Well, no, I guess you're right. All right, so it's metal. A metal fortress.
Glass. If they could find a way to make enough glass.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
Yeah. Something like there's definitely some, like maybe it's cloth, you know, like it's,
yeah,
you know, anything that's fabricated, it cannot be controlled by the druids.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer a raw material. So, you know, there's all types of stuff that they're, you know, maybe it's you take wood and you burn it. So then you've now made like charcoal type thing that it's now. You can use it.
That's very cool.
You've covered it in tar, whatever. Like,
yeah.
You've done something to manipulate.
Insulate it.
To manipulate it so it can't be used by the druids. And then you create this, like, the zone, basically, where the druids cannot get you. And I was thinking about this specifically from the angle of what if there are eco-terrorist druids that are being very assassiny, where they are just controlling small rocks on the road. If you go by, they'll just fling it at your head and kill you.
Oh, fuck yeah. This is Magneto in X-Men 2.
Yeah,
when he breaks out of the plastic prison.
Very Magneto, but these druids are just like you don't know where they are. They can be anywhere in the world. They control the ground. They can feel in the ground. They know that you like the king is leaving the keep, and they just can grab a rock on the side of the road and just fling it from 5,000 miles away. Just
5,000 miles?
Yeah, I mean 500 miles, however much long you like, whatever distance you want to do, but far. It's not like they don't have to be in sight, and they can just whip this rock 45 miles an hour, just poof, headshot, he's done.
It's actually reminding me of the Aurelian Desert that Brennan Lee Mulligan came up with in Worlds Beyond Number.
Yeah, the one that's like blinding.
The Wizard Palace in the middle of the desert at one point, one of the episodes says they can use it to a strategic advantage because there's like no humidity, so no one can use cloud cover to fly in. They have perfect visibility at all times.
That's cool.
So maybe it is a big metal box in the middle of the desert.
Maybe, yeah. But then the grains of sand.
Shit. Yeah, the grains of sand.
They can whip them. But then they just get caught in a sandstorm.
The glass desert.
Maybe.
Didn't we come? Wasn't that an idea? Yeah, we had that idea with the mountain reflects the lights forming glass on the desert.
Yes, yeah. That was an idea you had once upon a time.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
Yeah,
but it's just really hard to escape nature. So the eco-terrorist druids will probably win depending on how determined they are. But that's where I was like, okay, well, what if they have that level of ability
to just
control rocks by touching the ground, and maybe they can't whip them because they can't control them once they like leave the ground. I don't know, but
unless they get really good at math and arcs and trigonometry and all that, but maybe. That feels more the domain of wizards.
But maybe it's more that they can also control the air if they're like a really powerful, like the head of the druid like organization can do that, where he can do both the rock and the air, so then he's able to whip it and then use the air to propel it. He can use the air to propel it further, so like only he's able to pull off these assassinations.
I want to bring back the
sexy.
I already did that. I want to bring it back to Last Airbender, specifically the scene in Legend of Korra when Zaheer kills the Earth Queen by pulling all of the air out of her lungs.
Oh, God.
In that really fucking awesome scene.
Yeah, I guess Zaheer is great inspiration.
Zaheer is...
He's an eco-terrorist druid.
He is more of an anarchist, but... Well, that's just a motivation. He is absolutely an eco-terrorist druid. Yeah.
He's a great... He's
the Red Lotus, that whole group, because they have one of each of the four elements.
Yeah, they're eco-terrorist druids.
They are completely eco-terrorist druids. Bruh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, and you're a big fan of them. You were like, this is the best part of the show, is Zaheer.
Was I wrong? I
thought Zaheer was really good. It was a really good villain. But I think they had, apart from the Water Tribe season, it was all quite good.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it wasn't all.
Yeah.
I just think for me, it's like, it's good. And then Zaheer.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, you could do that. That's fucked up. You could do it like...
It's a lot of opportunity for remote assassination.
Yeah, and that's what I was really thinking about.
Which is cool. That. Especially if you wanted to even bring in an aspect that we haven't talked about, which is fauna. Like flora and fauna. Which we can talk about... Yeah. We talked about the food a little bit and the use of poisons, but bringing in animals again. Having a...
Just birds.
Well, birds as your spies, but I was actually thinking...
No, birds as your fucking, like, weapons.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. I was going the insect route, but I, no. Talk to me about these suicidal birds that flame themselves.
They don't have to be suicidal. We have birds of prey. Just send a fucking hawk. Good luck. The hawk will kill you quick.
Hey, a hummingbird flying at escape velocity right into your skull will also be very effective.
Maybe, but the hawk can leave. You know, like, I mean,
because hummingbirds are one use only.
Yeah. Suicidal hummingbirds is pretty funny. It's just like, you know,
kamikaze hummingbirds.
Because you could, you know, definitely, this feels like a Hitchcock, you know, this is the birds or whatever going on, you know, sending a big flock. But I think you could just use these birds of prey as huge assets and weapons because they're also, you know, normal parts of nature, and they can fly and they can move quickly. So they just fly in and do what you want them to do. But then also, say you take a big flock of birds just to make a place like uninhabitable.
Yeah.
Pigeons keep, like, you know, like if
they're will straight up shit on your car.
Say there is, you know, a murder of crows that's 1,000 strong.
That commits murders.
And it just flies around like above an area. Like fucking with people's mental health.
Committing murders.
No, I'm ignoring that for a reason. But like, it's blocking out the sun. It's disruptive. They won't shut up. They keep cawing. You try to shoot at them.
I dig that.
You try to shoot at them. You might kill some, but now your entire life is dedicated to trying to kill these crows, and they keep coming because more come because they are sending more. Mm-hmm. And then they're also creating other problems. So it's, you know,
do it with crickets chirping at night too.
Yeah.
Some excessive noise, or a haughty dog, you know, the bird that gives the famous, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Big. You could do it, you know, if it's on a coast, there's just whales coming up.
Bro, a fucking skunk.
Oh, skunks everywhere. Yeah. You can just make a place fully uninhabitable if you just lay out a bunch of skunks.
I want to come back to insects for a second, though, because I do like the idea. They're not mutating them in the sense that like a wizard might through like through experiments and science. But I do like the idea of like an eco-terrorist druid that is doing a little bit of advancing evolution and speedrunning evolution a bit to create some really deadly shit. So, kind of a little Mr. Sinister who's really more of a wizard archetype than anything.
So just Australia.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they just recreate Australia.
But that would be a great way. We were talking about remote assassination.
Send a Black Widow or a more, you know, a brown recluse or whatever. Just send those tiny little spiders around everywhere. Like, remember that story of that village in Australia that was literally overrun by spiders? By huntsman spiders.
Oh my god, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, like that shit's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Let alone if you send in, because like you can also just send in big predators. You just say.
You could, but that, I.
It's less like, you know, people feel like they can defend themselves a little bit easier.
I think that's.
Yeah. But if it's this insidious problem, what are you to do? I mean, literally.
I'm not trying to be funny though, but think back to the plagues. Those are all things that you cannot really defend yourself against.
Yeah.
You being overrun by boils, frogs, locusts.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
Yeah. Or you're inside. The boils, I guess. Can't escape that inside. But yeah, because you like, if you wanted to mix it up, then you just send in like, here's six bears charging into this town. And they're grizzly bears. They're angry. And they're on a mission to like, scare you out.
One polar bear.
Yeah. Like it's lost.
How'd it get there? We don't know.
We never.
That's what's fucking terrifying.
Mm. Interesting.
How the fuck did they get it here?
Literally, that's the plot. That's a plot in Point Line. Lost.
Great. And what?
Lost.
Oh.
There's a whole thing about, like, why there's it's a polar bear on this island. What the fuck?
It's weird how many times over the course of these 100 episodes I have stumbled my way into a Lost plot line.
There's a lot of
episodes. This is
like
the fourth or fifth times that this has happened.
Six seasons, 23 episodes a season. There's a lot of fucking content. And I've seen it multiple times. It's great. It's on Netflix now, apparently.
I keep, like, stumbling into these things.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. All right, we've been going for quite a while here. Do we want to wrap this one up?
No, I think... I think this has been... These 100 episodes have been a labor of love. They've been a great joy. And we really hope that you all have gotten ideas and inspiration and joy out of these as much as we have coming up with these ideas and sharing them with you all. It has been an honest to God's pleasure.
Now, in that vein, over the 100 episodes, what stuck for you the most? What idea do you think that has been discussed in this podcast has actually stuck with you more than any other? I think I can go first because I have
go
my
first.
Answer. I think it's Nick's.
Yeah.
It's the mausoleum.
Yeah. Vivianite.
And Vivianite. Well, Nick'site.
Nick'site, yeah.
But it was because it was a multi-part. I think it played a big part of that.
Yep.
We did do the re-release because of that multi-part thing.
Yep.
But I think it's the visual of that. Stuck the
magical
most.
Crystal growing out of the dead body, being cultivated.
Yeah, it's that. And then, of course, it's the burn.
The burn. I'm going to throw in another one, which is something else that I also think about a lot, which is the myth of the sun and moon.
Oh, okay. I have not thought about that since we did it. So that's
the
cool.
The one where the moon, it is a cosmological origin myth where night and day is you have the moon and the sun that are the children of earth and sky.
Yeah.
Night was originally perfectly dark. Day was incredibly bright. The moon stole some of sun's light and thus began the cycle of night and day.
Yeah.
And that one pops into my head quite a bit, mostly because we also did some work in the temples. We talked about building the temple for them where the cult of the sun and moon or the religions around them share the same physical space.
Yeah.
And they trade out during the day. I thought that was really cool.
That was a good one. Yeah. I liked that one a lot. I mean, we've had a lot of ideas and I think a lot of them have stuck for me. There's very few episodes where it's like, well, those bad ideas. Those do exist. Sometimes it'll be like, well, I have a bad idea. You have a good idea, vice versa.
Recording very frustrated, not with the experience of recording, but just with myself for not liking my idea.
Yeah.
Having regret immediately afterwards of, oh, why the fuck didn't I think of that? And like, that would have been much cooler. And I'll tell you what one of my biggest ones was, honestly, was Body Mods, which was an episode that I pushed and fought for.
And you didn't like your idea?
And I didn't like my idea.
I don't remember either ideas on that one because I don't remember every idea we've ever done.
Sure, yeah, I don't either. But I remember being really frustrated with my idea on that one.
Yeah, I think there's been plenty of times where I don't think I've been frustrated the same way you have, but I've just been like, I'm unsatisfied.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, I'm okay with it because that's the process of world building. And this whole project has been laying out the process of world building on record. Where there are plenty of times where the idea is a dead end. The idea is bad. The idea is simple and fine, but there's not much to it. Or you get frustrated and you realize later on the idea could have been better after you've already... In our case, you know, we put it out and then the idea is done. But like if you publish a work or you already share the idea at your D&D table or whatever, the idea is...
You've got to fight through it.
It's an incomplete, or it's like, now I have my great version of it. Shit. Can I retcon it? Can I add on to it? Or do I just have to leave it alone?
Hey, George Lucas did it.
And just learn to love the idea that I had. And I've had that moment with ideas that I've thrown out at a table and been like, oh, that's incomplete. Let me try to steer it to where I want to go. And I think this podcast is a great example of sometimes you have to go through that process of doing it in some way. Having to defend it or explain to someone else goes a long way to show it's not there yet.
I think the other thing that related to that point is important here is to highlight how much reps matter.
Yeah.
I've noticed as these episodes have gone along, I am able to sift through ideas very differently and faster than I did at the beginning. And it's not even necessarily just evaluating good or bad. It's more on, is there room to grow here? Is this complete and worth discussing? Or is it just ready to go?
Yeah, there's
the episode we did on Crowns when I did that speed run thing. That one of the ones that stuck for me, which we didn't talk about, was the crown that is the scalp and hair of the original ruler. That's complete.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I'm not going to discuss it because it's done.
Yeah. And I think that so many of our ideas are that. And then we're like, well, I guess let's try to talk about it so we have content. But like, we could just call it good there. And sometimes we do pull out a little bit more and we just explain it a bit more. But the core idea was complete.
Yeah.
And there's been times where we've literally pitched a core idea, been like, that's complete. Let's just leave it as it is, and let's take it as a jumping off point to discuss what I just thought of after you said that.
Right.
And then that happened in a very recent episode where I was like, yeah, we've solved my idea, moving on, what we just talked about, way cooler, let's go that direction.
Let's go. Yeah.
And that happens. And because that's, I think you're right. It's like, it's reps and it's iteration.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you grow both.
And you also learn what ideas you like and what things you are better at. I know if I am ever designing a transport hub, I am going to come to you.
I mean, I will have already brought the transport hub to you by the time you get to that point, so don't worry.
The train port.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to point out to realize those things that are your own tropes. What am I gravitating towards all the time? And obviously, we've been doing this for a while, so we know this is an idea that's really made for me or made for you, and like, clearly we're moving that way. But then, as we've discussed multiple times, often the topics that are outside of those tropes is where we do our most interesting work, because you get stuck in your own trope. I get stuck on hubs. I like them. I like building them, but I'm not coming up with new cool ideas all the time because it's not like my brain goes into autopilot and knows what to pull on. But the second you go into a thing that you don't know well, you pull on completely new things because you don't have a safety net. So that it's, you know, you get to have the constraints giving you that creative freedom.
No, that happened to me in doing swords, because I actually have spent a weird amount of time watching blacksmithing videos and reading about. So, and I knew too much that I got stuck in the minutia of it, and it became unfun.
I don't even remember what you did on that one, but
that's exactly my point.
Yeah,
I ended up doing the spider web thing, but.
Oh, yeah.
Which ended up, we got there, but that was a slog for me to get there.
Yeah.
And so I think that for me, I think that's been the most surprising thing, is how much you learn to recognize your own tropes quickly and how much you learn that reps really do matter in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what stuck for us over a 100 episode run. We'll keep going, but until we're done.
But which we never are, because we're just creating shit out of thin air.
Yeah, I mean, logistics will be the thing that kills us, probably, not ideas.
Exactly.
But you know,
well, famously God, you know, it took God 6 days, so.
Or just an eco-terrorist druid might kill us. To echo what Ethan said previously, we really appreciate you guys listening to us over this time, whether or not you just joined us or if you've been listening since the first one. Appreciate those people who have stuck around from the beginning and been consistent. And we hope that you continue to listen. And if you have any reflections to share with us and anything, things that have stuck with you over this run so far, please send them our way.
As always, emails in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.